Hello,
Hello,
and welcome to another episode of From
from
the Lower
the
Level.
lower
We'll get that right one day. I'm Moshi.
and I'm always out of sync, Patrizio.
This week, as usual, we are talking all things Real Housewives. We're going to be looking at Potomac, we're going to be looking at Atlanta, we're going to be looking at Salt Lake City. But before we get underway, we've definitely got not as many as last week, but a few headlines that things that have just been happening in Housewives news that need to be discussed.
Yeah, like the first one that's come out, we discussed this last week. Erica and Tom Girardi were getting divorced, and we had a lot of, conspiracy theories that we shared. But this week has come out that Tom Girardi doesn't want to give Erica any spousal support, and in fact, also wants her to pay the attorney fees for the divorce. Wow.
Are you gagged?
Well, I mean, okay, so last week we discussed how the embezzlement, and that's why we thought they were getting divorced. But this week, given that he wants her to pay the attorney fees for the divorce, it looks like this was all initiated by Erica.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking now. I think we thought this was going to be like this really nice, clean, amicable kind of divorce. I think, when I read blogs and stuff, most of us kind of people who are really into this kind of assumed that they always had some sort of arrangement. But now things seem to be getting a little bit messy. And if there's one thing that I think Erica isn't, or she doesn't want us to think she is messy. And so I'm a little bit worried. And I also feel like I don't know whether I'm in favor of this or whether I'm not, but I suspect that like him putting his foot down on spousal support has something to do, obviously, with the embezzlement and her and him sort of helping to fund the type of lifestyle that Erica has. And so I think he really wants to show, like, wants to kind of put her in a position to show that, like, it's not all about that. But I don't know, it's a bit sad.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's a lawyer and lawyers want to win. And so maybe this is him just trying to win the divorce.
That's true. But what is he going to win? And also, I'm wondering if they had any sort of prenup in place. Like I really just expected this to be very clean, but I guess this whole embezzlement thing has made it messier and murkier.
Well, I mean, our good friend Ashley from Potomac, she also had the prenup, but then didn't expire after a certain amount of years. Like maybe that's the same arrangement that Erica and Tom have, that their prenup expired after like 15 years or something together. I don't know. It's definitely the twist we weren't expecting.
100%. I wonder what it's going to mean for her on the show.
It means nothing because she shares nothing of like personal like value on the show anyway. I feel like next season they're not even going to discuss a divorce. It'll be like a footnote.
There is no way that the producers would let that happen. I feel like if she doesn't share this part of herself, that is literally her signing her death warrant. Like she's off the show. And if she's off the show, I mean, aside from obviously she must make some, she makes money off her music and she wrote a book. I'm just, and obviously like she could always just be like also an influencer. Like I don't think she's ever going to be short of funds, but I really think that if she does not give us more details about this divorce, she's going to be done because she's never giving us anything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would argue she was probably done 2 seasons ago, but
100%.
she's still here. So we'll see what happens when the next season comes out, like in 2025 at this point.
I don't know about that. The way people are filming during COVID, I mean, we can discuss that. I think we'll probably get more housewives than we've ever wanted, especially because they're just at home. So what else are they going to do but film themselves?
Yeah, but is that the content that we asked for?
No, it's definitely not, but content needs to be made. So I just think these things will be made. But I'm really keen to see what the headline is around this divorce next week. I don't know about you, but I have my spicy popcorn ready to go. I am watching.
Well, you know, Moshi, speaking of things that nobody asked for, Lisa Rinna has just launched her lip kits.
Are you kidding me? Rinna lips. Is she just an adult version of Kylie Jenner? Is that really? And I know Kylie Jenner is an adult technically, but to me, still a child.
Well, I don't. Who is her market? I mean, like, I think these days every celebrity is coming out with a makeup range, right? Like, from influencers to reality TV stars to drag queens, everyone seems to have their own makeup range at this point.
True that.
I don't know. I feel like Lisa's a little late to the party. I mean, her taglines have always been about her lips, so it sort of would have made a lot more sense maybe like 5 seasons ago, but she's arrived. Will you be ordering yours, Moshi?
Maybe for my mom. Oh, shit. No, I mean, I saw the box. I know Leah from New York Housewives received the box, and it contains like a lipstick, a lip gloss, and a lip liner, which, as somebody who did actually buy a Kylie lip kit very early on in the day, the Rinna lip kit does give you more. I've only seen the packaging. I haven't seen the actual product. I need to do some more investigative research to see if this is really worth the dollars. But from what I understand, she's been wanting to do this line for a really long time. And I suspect the duster jackets and cardigans that she's been hawking on HSN probably took most of that time that she would have spent on perfecting her makeup range, because the truth is, like, she had something that wasn't broke. Like, it was really successful. It's been giving her money and allowing her to just be Lisa Rinna. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be a plot point on next season as well. I'm sure there'll be a launch party.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I don't know about you, but are they filming at the moment? I feel like I'm not hearing a lot about whether Beverly Hills is filming at the moment.
No, they had to stop because they all caught COVID, like half the crew and half the cast. So, yeah, I guess it will resume filming soon.
Okay, I'll be interested to know how that goes. But yeah, that's an interesting scenario. But Beverly Hills.
Oh, sorry, I just cut you off there because I'm just too excited to talk about the next headline. It's actually not on the list, but I woke up today to some breaking news.
Oh my God, breaking news. Alert, alert.
Time magazine has named Portia Williams as Person of the Year.
That's a lie.
I tell you, when I saw that meme, I was like, justice for Portia.
Finally. Portia Luther King. In the words of Marlo, Portia Luther King. And I mean, we'll definitely talk about that when we talk about the Atlanta premiere. But it's Christian Grey Snow on Instagram has put together 4 mock-ups of the Time Person of the Year, and they are all amazing. You need to find them if you haven't. There's one which is Karen Huger, and it's iconic. There's T'Challa is on there as well. Portia, and I'm just trying to remember who's the other one.
I could only see Portia, and I just was too excited.
Oh, the other one is Mary M. Cosby.
No, makes sense.
And it's for hospital smell. It is. They are so good. Yes, Christian Grey Snow on Instagram. Please find those memes. They are brilliant. Do we have anything else in the headlines this week?
No, well, the final meme of the week was the elf on the shelf, the Garcelle and the Pharrell.
I saw that. That's so good. Yeah, I mean, we love a holiday meme, this idea of celebrities putting themselves on celebrities that rhyme with their name. I loved it.
Tis the season.
Well, on that note, I think we should probably take a quick break and then come back and get stuck into Potomac.
Yes.
And we're back. It was a very quick break. Let's discuss the final episode of Potomac. Can you believe, Patrizio, that 5 seasons of our beloved ladies have now happened?
Like, what a season. And I can't believe that some people are still sleeping on Potomac.
Neither can I.
What is that about? Neither
can I. I just want to say that when it comes to, I really thought the New York finale was something, but these producers and these editors, they gave us what I didn't even know we needed.
Yeah. Look, there's so much to unpack this week. In the last 10 minutes alone.
I can't believe that we're done and that we're about to head into what I think is going to be an epic 3-part reunion. But I mean, let's talk about this episode. So we're coming off the back of the wig shift party where Karen left her own party because it was kind of found out that she'd allegedly set up Monique and Candace to be in the same place at the same time. And she was not having that.
Moshe, I'm going to have to stop you there. Karen Huger had organized a dinner. It was all set in advance, okay? She didn't leave her party early. She had a dinner to go to.
Okay.
Let's just get the facts straight.
I would never question the grand dame. Her intentions are always pure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, so the thing that we know is that it is Christmas time or it's holiday time in Potomac. So it's roughly like this time last year. Gosh, I can't believe that they filmed that stuff a year ago.
I know. It's so wild to think about.
It really is. We know that Giselle has her girls. They're trimming the tree. The idea is that Jamal Bryant is going to come into town and they're going to spend the holidays together.
Whose idea was that? It was never going to happen.
It was Giselle's idea. We open with Eddie and Wendy out on a date. And can I just say that I love them. And I really want Wendy to give us a bit more next season so that we see more of her and Eddie and their family. I want more.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus that I've seen online. People love Eddie, like favorite new house husband.
Yes.
But we haven't really seen enough of him. I definitely agree with you. More Wendy next year. More Wendy.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see what the dynamic is at the reunion with Wendy. And then also because we know they're going to bring the husbands out. It'll be really interesting to see what they're like as a couple. I definitely think they're going to be that couple that like back each other up and go in it as a team. Like that's the thing that I see with them is that they're growing together and it looks really beautiful.
But I mean, I don't think that Wendy has that much to address during the reunion. I mean, she's had a pretty chill season other than her like frenemy situation with Karen this season. That's sort of been on again, off again. It's all just been about her, like her relationship with her mother more than anything, I feel.
But you know what Wendy does that I think is really is needed in the show. So Wendy is obviously coming into this show in the 5th season. These women, a lot of the issues that are happening, like even everything leading up to Candace and Monique's fight and the way that Ashley and Candace are friends, it's all part of, and I would even say, and I think like we can talk about this in terms of in this episode, the only real time that we see Monique is when she's visiting her therapist and she's talking about how to address what's been going on and to address what her feelings are. And it was really interesting. I was looking at her face and I was like, she's really been affected by this. Like I can see, even though she's quite thin naturally, I can tell that she's lost a lot of weight and you can see the stress on her face. And when she sort of breaks down with her therapist and she says that she still feels like she's having to prove herself with these women, so much of all the frustration that came out this season is stuff that has been building up since the very first season, or at least the second season. And what I think Wendy did really well coming in this year is Wendy doesn't know all of that stuff. Yeah, she's probably seen bits and pieces on TV, but she wasn't part of it. And Wendy came kind of from a place of just objectively viewing this stuff. She kind of got to be the voice of reason as opposed to being the devil's advocate. And the voice of reason is so much better. She went in to bat for Candace. Obviously, Candace is her friend, so she did have some bias there. But I do think that what Wendy does is she does call out the bullshit. And that was Karen's issue with her. Karen came from a place where you haven't paid your dues. You are not allowed to call me out. But Wendy was like, nah, that's not how this works. Like, you cannot do these things and think it's not going to happen. And I think, like, right up until the moment where things get explosive in this episode, Wendy is still calling the bullshit out, but still able to, like, maintain her relationships with everyone. I do think it's a shame that Wendy and Monique never got a chance to really know each other, because I do think that they would have been a great team. I think they could have really taken on Giselle and Robin. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, look, I don't know, because I think at the same time, like, having watched last season and the unresolved, I mean, I thought it was resolved at the last reunion that, like, Monique and Candace were, like, friends again. I mean, obviously, those reunion, like, you know, reparations, I don't know, what do you call it? Like, when they, like, pretend to, like, apologize to each other, like, it's always a bit, like, all right, let's just wait till next season. But I think Candace was a little problematic last season. And, you know, I get Karen's position a lot more than Wendy's, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Because we are invested. We know that background and that history. I do think that Candace has kind of always been really nasty. And because of that, I mean, you know how I feel. I make no secret that I don't think she deserved to be physically attacked. But she is so rude and condescending and really antagonizes people, like she always has. And the thing that I really frustrated me in this season is that, yes, she was, something horrible definitely happened to her, but she took no time at all to take any accountability for her actions. And that is the thing that frustrated me the most, is that I think because Monique came across as being not remorseful, everybody used that as an opportunity to just, like, go in on Monique and not at all hold Candace accountable for anything. And the only people who I think were able to, like, try and get Candace to hold herself accountable was Ashley and Karen. And I think the problem was that Ashley completely missed the whole fight. So, you know, that was what they used against her. And I just think Karen came at it from the wrong way. I think Karen had 100% the best intentions, but I think she managed it really, really badly. But I mean, I do hope that, and then you know what happened is, like, the fight just got bigger than what it was. Like, once it went to court and then Monique did the counter filing, it completely lost the point of what had happened. And that was that these are two women who had been so close, and for whatever reason, their friendship came to a head because they just couldn't, both of them just couldn't step out of themselves to be nice to each other. And
I was going to say, was it in this episode that Monique talks about how she wanted to have a sit down with Candace, but at the point of trying to organize it with the producers, that's when Candace had filed in court. And so then that was the point where they could no longer talk to each other face to face, right? And I think had that meeting occurred, I think this season could have looked a lot different.
Yeah, I agree with you. Had that meeting occurred, but I'm going to be really honest. I think Candace had an agenda, and I think she was going to see it all the way through, because she wanted this to be, not that she wanted this to be her storyline, it ended up being her storyline. But I think she saw a really great opportunity and was, like, going all in on it. And I think she definitely wants Monique off the show. I do think though, something needed to happen before the blow up, before they were at the wine barn. Like something needed to happen before then, because they were just teetering on the edge and it exploded. And I just, I'm so frustrated that they couldn't even resolve just to be civil properly.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you have some other highlights for the episode, but I want to like fast forward to this like mega final scene where we see the last blow up happen. But before that, congratulations to Robin. She gets engaged in this episode.
Oh my God. Yes, let's talk about something happy. She's so beautiful.
But do you think she knew that it was happening?
No, I actually really don't think that she did know. And I love that, like, her and like it ends on like this holiday party. Everybody's wearing white or whatever because it's Winter Wonderland. And I will say, I didn't hate Giselle's fashions.
Uh-huh. I didn't even notice, to be honest.
Do you mind if I backtrack on something to build up to this party?
Yes, I will.
Which I think is really important. Is, and again, we spoke about this last week. You were feeling a bit sorry for Michael Darby last week at the dinner with Uncle Lump. Again, this week we see him playing the doting dad with Ashley. And Ashley, in her confessionals, is talking about how strong their relationship is. They're playing with baby Dean. It's his 5-month birthday or whatever. Then they start obviously to talk about Candace. And Michael talks about how much he dislikes Candace and Chris. And he talks about how they've never made an effort to really get to know him. And that's something that's always really frustrated him. And we start to see Ashley telling us that Michael seems to have never gotten over how much they went after him last year. Because now that I think about it, the way they've gone after Monique, or the way Candace has gone after Monique this year, is the same way she went after Ashley and Chris last year. I mean, and Michael Darby last year. So that by the time we get to this party and everyone is drunk, we know shit's going to happen. But also Michael Darby being like so confident that Juan wasn't going to propose.
What did he know? What did he know?
It's clear he knew nothing. He knew nothing. He was just feeling proudful that Juan hadn't let him in on the news ahead of time.
Do you think that they're even friends like that? I never got the sense that Michael is really friends with anyone like that.
I agree with you. I never got the sense that he's mates with all those guys. But, I mean, we know from talking about the Ding Dong last season that Michael definitely has a crush on Juan, which, I mean, it's hard not to. Juan is a beautiful man.
Yeah, and during this, like, party as well, he keeps, like, I don't know, being very, like, no homo with Juan. I feel like every time he's like, yeah, like, you're a great guy. But I'm like, oh no, I'm into women.
I think, like, at this point, Michael just needs to, everybody's journey on the spectrum is their own journey. But I think we need to stop acting like there's something wrong if Michael does have a thing for Juan or for other men. Like, who cares? Mm-hmm. I also think it is kind of quite beautiful that I like any sort of friendship, I think it's quite nice. I think like Juan is probably the only person that can just like deal with Michael out of all the husbands as well, because I think he does a really good job of trying to calm Michael down on his night, on Juan's own night. But yeah, let's talk about this Winter Wonderland party.
I mean, mistake number one was letting Michael Darby drink. He started off with one shot as a celebratory shot with the engagement. I was like, okay, fine. But it just spirals out of control. And like, that's the thing with all of these like Housewives franchises. It's always the drinking that gets people in trouble. Always.
He, like he was really drunk, and it's really scary because you could see how drunk he was in his eyes. And I will say that they were all quite inebriated, I do think. But I think like he tends to take on a bit of a rage. But I think the second mistake Michael Darby made was getting into women's business. Like, why was he eavesdropping on the ladies' argument? So we should say that the ladies were having a sit down, and they were having another argument around like Karen inviting Monique, like Karen potentially setting Candace and Monique up for another situation, and it was blowing up. And Candace, in true Candace form, was in a rage, which I suspect probably also was brought on by booze. And she was like flying out of her seat, and she was screaming, and everybody's looking, which is what happens whenever the ladies all sit down to congregate together. And Michael was just like eavesdropping from right behind them. And then he had to open his big mouth, go over to Candace's husband, Chris, and say, "You need to control your woman." Woo! Never.
Yeah.
Never.
I don't know. Like, I think there's, I understand where he was coming from, because sometimes it is like you need someone as like a circuit breaker to come in and like
calm
people down and try to like, you know, bring it back down to a two from the 500 that it was. Yeah, but that just causes more problems, doesn't it? Because obviously there's some unresolved drama between Chris and Michael Darby as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, Chris sort of turned around and told him to, like, shut the F up. Why am I censoring myself? We swear on this show. Shut the fuck up. And that's when Michael was like, "Hey, how dare you?" And then he went off. But, yeah, I just feel it was one of those things where it was like all the bad things were happening. You know, there was already kind of tension. There was already alcohol. You know, Michael approached Chris. Chris did not want to be approached. It was just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a lot to watch.
It was.
Karen walks out. She's done.
I love it. I love it that she said, "Hey, Ray, come on. We don't need to be here around these people." She is the grand dame. She does not need to be around these people. She can go.
Yeah, she does not need to be amongst the people.
Not amongst these people. No. She does not. Not at that moment. But also just like Michael Darby flying into a rage after that and, you know, making threats and calling things out. Like, he needs some therapy. It's quite clear that there's a lot on his chest as well. He's going through a lot of things, because the way he got that angry as well, nah.
I thought it was great that Ashley asked for his microphone to be taken off, because clearly he was talking a lot of shit.
Yep.
And his mic needed to have come off. And that's what's gotten him in trouble before as well. It's always the microphone, the camera that is watching him that he doesn't realize, and he touches butts and he makes comments, and he needed to be removed.
He did need to be removed. When he went into that back sort of production room and started screaming at the production team, and Ashley coming in and being like, "Excuse me, they are doing their job, Michael Darby." Like, again, Ashley knows what the score is. She knows what she signed on for. And for whatever reason, it might be generational. You know, we do know Michael Darby is of a different generation.
Shade.
Facts. It's all tea. He does not seem to get it. Ashley gets it. And, you know, I love that she just called him out, and she was like, "You are embarrassing me. What the hell are you doing?" Like, it was really great. For whatever reason, we seem to think that, I know that I did at least, that Ashley is, you know, under some sort of spell. Like, for ages, we were like, she's not separating with him because of the prenup. We didn't think that she had any agency in her relationship, that she was just doing everything that Michael wanted. But it's becoming very clear to me that Ashley has 100% agency in her relationship. Everything that she does, she's doing it for a reason. Like, we need to give Ashley so much more credit for how smart she is. I don't think she has to stay with this man. I definitely believe that she chooses to. And it's not really up to us, I guess, to question why, because all I know is that I feel very much like Ashley has a plan. Like, I feel like she knows the score. She understands what's going on.
Yeah, I think, like, in the same way that Michael clearly had some unresolved issues with Chris this season, he also had a lot of unresolved issues with production. After the evil villain edit that he got. I mean, like, I don't even think we ever got an answer on whether he actually did, like, sexually harass the production members, but definitely he has it in for production at this point, which is why that whole blow-up happened. And I love that Ashley was just like, if I was the one acting this way, like, you would be so pissed off at me.
Yeah.
So I really hope that she didn't sleep with him that night, because he needed to be on the floor, like, not even on the couch, like, on the floor in the apartment.
He needs to be in the gutter. She should have just left him in the gutter. So that whole thing blows up. But then what I love is we head back to the party. Michael Darby's out, Candace and Chris are out, and everybody else is still just like, fuck it. And Giselle is like, you know what? Fuck it. They're all gone. Let's just continue dancing. And can I just say, and I can say this because I'm a Black woman, these people do not know how to dance. I was watching them, and I don't know if it's because they're not allowed to play the music for whatever reason that they're actually dancing to, but whatever what music we were listening to and whatever we were seeing on the screen, they were two different things. Like, I was like, this is not dancing. Like, especially when Giselle starts doing her little twerk, and even like Robin, oh, she was like the worst of the dancers.
I thought they were all just drunk. That's why I thought that situation was happening.
You just should never, even if you're drunk, you should still know how to dance. I'm sorry. I was just like, wow, you are not doing Black people right now. This dancing is atrocious.
Wow. I really hope that that's addressed at the reunion. Like, why is this dancing so bad?
Like, why? I know, I'm just feeding into stereotypes, and that's so horrible. But honestly, I expected better dancing. I really did love that they picked up Wendy saying to Eddie, like, while they were like backing it up on each other, let's get ready to make baby number four. I mean, that was amazing. That's the stuff that I love. Yeah. Oh, and I also clocked two things that were kind of brilliant in this episode. Robin stating twice throughout the episode that there is an open bar at this party.
Well, I mean, you know, Candace loves a posh bar.
Look, and it took me back. I'd almost forgotten about the Denim and Diamonds party and the cash bar, but I loved that. Yeah, they were just like, yes, and it's an open bar. I was like, brilliant. And the other thing that I loved is that Giselle addressing why Jamal wasn't at the party, because we know that Giselle is always like, is your man going to be at the party? Like, is Juan going to be at the party? Is this person going to be at the party? That's Giselle's whole thing. She's always like shading these women, like, where's Ray? Like, she's always talking about how other people's partners are not at the event to support them. And she made it a point to say that, well, it's Saturday night and Jamal is obviously a priest, so, you know, he's the pastor, so he's got work to do on Sunday, but he'll be at the next one. But I think we can just say that that's bullshit. He's not coming to any parties.
Yeah, I'm really glad that she addressed that Jamal is never coming because it's a fake relationship.
100%. And if it's not a fake relationship, I want more for Giselle.
It needs to be done. Like, Jamal and Giselle, man, I get it for the kids, maybe, but the kids are going to be grown soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And in true finale tradition, which is The Real Housewives, we always get a little, tableau. So that final shot of the housewife and then kind of a little update on what's happening now. And those are always good. And I think, like, when we talk about, like, Ashley and Michael, because, like we said, this was filmed a year ago, we now know that they are pregnant with baby number two, that their marriage has never been stronger shortly after they went on a vacation. It is heartbreaking, but like I said, I feel like Ashley has a plan. Wow. Personally, I feel like that plan was to get baby number two. She just wanted her kids to both have the same father. I think that if Michael fucks up again, I think he's gone for real.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's just like, let's just have another baby. But I don't know, maybe he's in therapy and we can only hope.
We can only hope. But I guess all will be revealed at the reunion.
I think we should take a break. Got more juicy episodes to get into and we'll come back.
Yeah, awesome. Love it. See you soon.
All right, and we're back. One door is closing. It's like half ajar right now, but another has opened. Real Housewives of Atlanta, back with season 13.
Yes.
13 seasons. And like, I think this season's going to be different.
I think we can already tell it's going to be different. I mean, for one thing, they are filming during the pandemic. It was all filmed during the pandemic.
It was filmed during the Black Lives Matter protests earlier this year as well.
Right.
And that's how this episode opens. We see their reflections on the last, I don't know, like 3 to 6 months from whenever they filmed that confessional to that point. Yeah, it really set the tone. And like, you know, the black backgrounds on their professionals as well. Like, you could tell that we were getting in deep.
We're going to talk about something very, very different. Definitely.
I will say that rest in peace, Lanithia. She's gone.
Nene Leakes, you are gone, but you are never forgotten.
And we only have, like, well, this episode, we actually only have 4 housewives.
Plus Marlo.
But yes, our unofficial peach holder. But this is like a 5 housewife season, which I'm kind of into. Like, just comparing with like franchises like Cheshire, where there's like 12 to 15 women at any one time.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
It's really nice, I think, just to have like 4 to 5 housewives. And like this episode, I feel like there was a lot still going on and there was only like 4 of them.
Yeah. I thought the episode was interesting. I think like we definitely had like Candy Kenya Cynthia doing one thing. And then we just had, as Marlo called her, Portia Luther King. Like all of Portia's scenes were her own footage and like footage of her during the protest. We didn't get anything of her at home. We didn't get anything like that. We just got Portia out in these streets doing the damn thing and being an activist.
I think, obviously, like, we should talk about this. Portia Luther King, like, what a journey she has been on.
Growth, baby, growth.
We love to see it. Like, remember a couple of seasons ago where she thought the Underground Railroad was an actual train?
Yes.
She was like, but where are the tracks?
And I love that they cut back to that footage when Candy was addressing Portia's growth. And I think for anybody who has not really seen Housewives or has forgotten, Portia's great-grandfather...
I think it's her grandfather.
Or her grandfather was a prominent activist. And her family have essentially for many, many years lived off the fact that he was an activist. Like this was something in her very first episode that we learned about her. And which is why when they took that trip to Savannah and they did the whole Underground Railroad thing, they really went in on Portia. That's the thing that they don't show. They don't show about them all going in on her and giving her so much. And she was so young on like not knowing all these things. And now we're seeing footage of her getting tear gassed and arrested. Like this woman.
And this is why she has been awarded Time Person of the Year.
I think if there really was an opportunity for that to happen, like she's definitely up there. She's definitely up there. But she's putting her body on the front line, and it's amazing to see. I mean, we do love to see it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think this is, like, why can't this be what Real Housewives is all about? Like, it doesn't have to be all about petty fights and stuff. It can be about, you know, political activism. And I think this year, more than ever, it's so important to see, like, this sort of stuff. And, you know, there's, on one hand, it's like Portia shouldn't have to be doing all the heavy lifting as a Black woman. But she is. She's out there. She is, you know, fighting for Breonna Taylor. And yeah, I think it was just very powerful, and just amazing to see the growth. Like, it's such a difference.
I agree with you. And I think you're right. I think we want to see, yes, we want to see drunkenness and we want to see petty squabbles, but we also do want to see depth from these women, because people are complicated. People have multitudes, and it is possible to be a fashion queen and a fashion diva, but also to be politically minded or to be a philanthropist. I mean, these people have a lot of money. There's no reason why they shouldn't be philanthropists. And I think, you know, I mean, Bethany is definitely in that camp. For all her faults, she does also put her money where her mouth is. But I think, yeah, I think it was really great to see this depth from Portia. And I think it was also interesting to see, for me anyway, how the other women addressed this. Like, we did see footage of Titty Scent, aka Cynthia, also protesting with Mike Hill and their children. I was really interested to see that Marlo was like more like, we want Portia to think more about PJ, we want her to be safe. I think, you know, there's this expectation, I guess, that just because perhaps you are Black that you should be protesting. And I think it's interesting to see the dynamic that's not always going to be the case. But yeah, just to kick off the season like this was wild. I mean, but there was also like definitely moments of levity that we saw that I also thought were really quite beautiful.
Oh, are you talking about Cynthia's tits?
Aside from Cynthia's boobs just constantly on display. And I really want to talk about that, because after those interviews, we are taken to Lake Bailey to the driveway, not even like the backyard, the beautiful lake scenery.
It's COVID safe, okay?
What Cynthia is saying is, I will not let you come through my house to even go through to my backyard. We are meeting in my driveway.
Well, look, I'm fine with it. You know, there was two guest appearances already in this first 5 minutes. One was Cynthia's left tit, and the other one was Marlo Hampton. Both iconic in their own right.
So iconic. I think Marlo asking to just see a little bit of nipple was a highlight for me. She's like, those are beautiful titties. Can I please see some nipple? Like, that was amazing.
I mean, nipples are in, and Marlo would know.
Marlo was telling us that nipples are in. And then that moment where Marlo just like grabbed her boobs and was just like, mine are here, but I want boobs like up here. Candy agreeing. And then the two of them, I think on camera, they agreed to go get their boobs done, which I will say that I think Candy has had done.
Well, obviously they're not where she wants them to be.
In her confessional look, I was like, oh yeah, I think she went and did it. I think she went and did the damn thing and got them done. Good on her.
Oh, interesting. Oh, well, I'm sure that'll be a storyline this season. Marlo and Candy go and get their tits done together.
That'd be really nice. But the other thing that I loved that was kind of wholesome and I just loved seeing, like, was seeing like Todd, Candy, their kids all washing Riley's car. Like, I guess because they're all stuck at home, so we're going to get these like family montages, and I really enjoyed just seeing this beautiful Black family just like washing a car and just having a chat. Seeing Candy with a baby strapped to her was something that I never thought I would ever see. And I was like, wow, Candy has like just Candy and small children. She's always doing something else. So it was like really good to see her just like with this baby strapped on her and just playing and talking to Riley. Like, I loved it.
Well, I mean, I like how you said the whole family's washing the car, but really it was just Todd.
It was just Todd. Oh, and I think like Ace was helping. He's really sweet. He's really cute.
Yeah, they do have cute kids.
Speaking of plastic surgery, though, I had totally forgotten that Riley had had a nose job.
Oh, I didn't even clock that.
Because I remembered that the pictures had been on the internet and people were like in the comments being like on Instagram, were in the comments talking about Riley's nose job. And then seeing her in this episode, I was like, oh, that's right. Riley did get a nose job.
She's got a lot of attitude, doesn't she?
You know what it is? She's just a very smart woman. Like, she was raised by a very independent mother, and we know what Joyce is like, Grandma Joyce, like Candy's mom. Like, Riley is just very sure of herself. And I think that that's a testament to how she was raised. She's very confident. I think it was interesting to learn from Candy that she's the one who told Candy to go after spousal support for the back payment that Riley's father hasn't paid. And I think that's interesting as well. We know that Riley is going heading off to NYU to study law. Like, she wants to be a lawyer. Like, she wants to make a change. She wants a lot of justice. And I think that that speaks to how she was raised.
Yeah, I think I agreed with Candy though at the same time when Candy was like, yeah, but do you realize that like if your father is then contributing towards your life that potentially, you might have to talk to him or have some sort of form of relationship with him? And Riley's just like, no, I don't. I don't know. What do you think? What's your thoughts there?
Look, I think it's an interesting one. And I think what I will also say that made me really happy was Todd kind of coming in to back Riley up on that position, because we know that Riley and Todd have not always had the best relationship. But I think it was really great to see Todd sort of say, I can understand where she's coming from. You know, Todd was also absent for a short amount of time from his daughter's life, but not as long as obviously Riley's dad has been. And I think like the reasons that Todd was absent was like he actually just didn't even know he had a kid for a really long time. But he sort of was saying that you can't expect Riley to meet her dad halfway. She can meet him some of the way, but her dad needs to meet her the bulk of the way. He also can't expect that after being out of her life for so long, I mean, she's a young woman now, that she's just going to roll over and want to be like daddy and daughter time all the time. Like, it's going to take a lot of time, possibly a lot of therapy as well, to get them to a really good place. But when you have children, there are just certain foundational building blocks that you have to provide for them. And I think Riley is in her right to say that financially, I mean, you need to provide something, and that's regardless of what our relationship is. And I think like from that, then she'll definitely have an opportunity to be more open to him. And I mean, I kind of understand where Riley's coming from. But I do think that over time, she will mature, she will learn more about herself, and she will soften. You know, she definitely has a hard exterior for someone so young, but she's been through a lot. There's a lot of trauma there. It's very obvious. But she will soften over time. And I think that both Candy and Todd and the family and the support that she has now at giving her the space to do that. She knows she's a lucky girl. She knows that she's been fortunate enough to have a really good life and have people around her that loves her. I think something positive will come out of that. I'm hopeful.
Well, I mean, another relationship that is like, on the way out is Kenya and her partner, whose name
Mark
actually,
Bailey.
thank you, his name escaped me for a minute there. Because we never see him. I mean, last season he tapped out and like literally like separated after that party. But Kenya's looking at filing for divorce. Obviously, lockdown and isolation and quarantine and whatever else you call it, where you're listening from, did not work for them. He was in New York, she was in Atlanta still. And I don't know. I think this is like, I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier. I mean, Keegan fought really hard for this relationship, but I don't think Mark's in it. Like, he, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it's really interesting because you know that I am not a Kenya Moore fan. I think there was a lot of conjecture, a lot of discussion around whether their marriage was even real. And I will say that I was one of the people that was like, this marriage is fake. But I'm coming back. Like, I don't even think they had a legal marriage. And I'm coming back now and I'm like, no, Mosh, you were wrong. It's quite clear that they really did get married. But I think that perhaps they got married for the wrong reasons. And I think it's such a shame. The one thing that I will say is that it seems like they both have a lot of love for Brooklyn, their daughter, like, and that's never going to change. But they're going to, but because of her, they're going to be in each other's lives for ages, forever. And so they need to figure something out. When Kenya went and met with her lawyer, that was like a really interesting discussion after the official meeting had ended, when they both didn't realize they were still being filmed and recorded, and her lawyer just going in and being like, Kenya, you are being so hard on yourself. You need to stop trying to defend this man. You need to start living for you. And I was like, wow, what, this lawyer is amazing.
Well, lawyers must see it all the time. And like, I agree with him. I think Kenya, I never subscribed to that it was a fake wedding. I think that she was just one of those people that she was at a certain age, and when things happen at a certain age, you kind of, you know, fasten things up, and they were in a honeymoon period. I think they had been together for like, what, 4 months, and then they decided to get married. I think that was probably like, you know, looking back, probably not the right move to make in that circumstance. But, you know, Kenya also really wanted to have a child. That was always like her thing. And when you find someone that you really want to make a child with, you just make it happen. But now we're sort of seeing like the other side of that, that, you know, they didn't have enough time, obviously, to really get to know each other and to like experience each other's nuances. And that's what's really happened here. But you're definitely right. Like, they're going to be around each other for a long, long time if, you know, Mark chooses to be in Brooklyn's life. And yeah, like, I think she is being hard on herself, but I think she was really in love with him and trying to make it work as much as possible.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it was also really nice to see, to go back and visit Moore Manor. And I will say that I think her house, like, she's done a really great job on her house. But I guess now we're getting to see that she's like going to continue landscaping it. She's building a pool, an outdoor spa, jacuzzi, and a play area for Brooklyn, because I think she'd had this idea that she was potentially going to move to New York. And I get that. I can see that she was kind of determined to move to New York to make things happen with Mark, but he hasn't really given her what she needed. So she's just like, fine, I'm just going to build this life for me and my daughter in Atlanta. And I'm really here for that. I'm here for that journey for her.
Oh, I mean, the fact that she was like, Mark didn't want a pool, but then I was thinking, I want a pool. So I went and did it. It's like, yes, that's the energy that we need, Kenya. Like, you do you. Like, fuck men. Men are trash. That, I mean, that's a whole other podcast, but like, men are trash. And good for you, Kenya, for like, you know, just doing what you want to do and don't worry about Mark. And at the end of the day, it's going to add value to the property. Like, let's just talk about that for a second.
Yes,
like,
you know, value, I mean, to the property.
Just build that pool, build the play area. I mean, yeah, that house has definitely come a long way. A long, long way. But yeah.
Okay, so then we also are taken to back to Cynthia's residence. We now see that Mike Hill and Cynthia, they've also figured out how their relationship is. Like, it sounds to me like Mike is potentially going to be spending most of his time in Atlanta, especially while they're filming. And he's written a book that's going to come out at some stage. And Cynthia has a new assistant who I can't wait to meet more of. He seems like he could be quite interesting.
But, I mean, the wedding comes up.
Oh, that's right.
So Mark, no, it's Mike. What? Mike.
This is Mike. Oh, Mike Hill. Mike Hill.
So many M's.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Hill, chill. Chill.
Mike Hill, chill. Yes.
So,
I want to talk about that later when we talk about their taglines, because
let's do that. I did see you leave a comment on a blog, but he brings up a really good point. So, like, obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic. The governor in Georgia has just announced some new restrictions around weddings, and that leaves Cynthia really upset because Cynthia wants this like huge wedding, 200 plus people. And she says it's because, like, she thinks this is, like, her fairy tale ending. Like, her previous two marriages.
She says she doesn't remember them.
Yes.
She says she does not remember her other weddings. We filmed one of them, Cynthia, okay?
You can watch it back on a streaming service near you.
Also, she's really determined to have the 10-10-20 numerology situation.
Which I'm here for, but I think this is where Mike brings up a good point, right? It's sort of like, why are you getting married? Are you getting married to me because of the date? Because you love me? Because you want to have a big party? And, like, that's the thing. Because at the end of the day, if you just want 10-10-20 on your marriage certificate, you just go to the courthouse, you get married on that date. You don't need to have the big-ass party. You can have that, like with everything else this year, you know, it's been like, can't wait to celebrate with you when this is all over. Like, we're going to have, like, a lot of birthdays to catch up on using that mentality. But, like, that's the thing with this wedding. Just have it later. Like, if you really want the date, just go to the courthouse. But I definitely felt like I was on Team Mike for this. I think, I don't know what Cynthia's, like, trying to achieve. Like, you really going to endanger everyone's, like, health and safety. Like, you can make it as safe as you possibly can, but obviously, like, that amount of people in a space together, and, like, the situation does obviously get a lot worse, you know, over the summer in most northern hemisphere. It was, like, okay in terms of, like, COVID cases, but it definitely, like, unravels, right? So, yeah, I just, Cynthia, like, what does she want?
What does she want? But I guess the other side of that is that we do know that she does go ahead with her big giant wedding. I mean, and I think we spoke about that, like, in our first episode, that we know that, or we may have tried to touch on it, that they do end up going ahead with the wedding. And we do know that Bravo refuses to film it, to be part of it in terms of production, and that if she wants it filmed, she essentially has to do that herself. But yeah, I can't wait till we get to those episodes. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Do you think that Marlo came to Cynthia's wedding in a face shield, face mask, and was measuring the distance between the chairs?
Oh, my God. When she was doing that in the driveway, I died. I think, obviously, she did that for entertainment's sake. But, I mean, I am keen to see. I think it's quite clear that people were just, you know, they were doing essentially what they were allowed to do, but probably not what they should have been doing. And I think, you know, that goes for so many people. That goes for myself perhaps as well during this whole year. Like, you know, we all do what we're allowed to do, but maybe, you know, we should all just really just be at home doing nothing. With that said, Candy and Todd and Don Juan, who, this is the thing that I love. Sometimes you get an ancillary character, like these little assistants, these other people in the peripherals who really are great. And they're building a steakhouse.
I mean,
Candy and her businesses.
I know. Here for it. Like, but I don't know, a restaurant during a pandemic? Interesting. Look,
yes, very. Todd was like, we can make this happen, and Candy's like, but we, things need to be spaced out, we need to really think about this, and Todd's just like, we can make this happen. I mean, I'm sure it will actually be successful, because I feel like nothing that they do is ever not successful. I do really think that Candy has the Midas touch, and I think she has, you know, a great head for business. I think she knows what the jig is. So yeah, I'm happy for them and their steakhouse.
Yeah, and the lounge, the COVID spreader lounge.
Yeah, the COVID spreader lounge. Look, I think it's really interesting that Candy's determined to not have a lounge situation in any of her restaurants. But at the end of the day, Todd is going to get his way, because I think, like, this speaks to, like, so much stuff that's happened over the years. But, you know, Todd was essentially part of the production crew. That's how he met Candy. Once they got together, he kind of really couldn't be part of the production crew anymore. So then and they wanted to, like, start having a family. And we know that if you work in film and television or whatever, that's going to take you away from your family. So he effectively changed his career path so that he could support Candy. And on the other side of that, Candy sort of decided, well, I'm going to make you part of my business. And, you know, these restaurants and these businesses that he is essentially responsible for is kind of like part of the agreement of their marriage. So, you know, I think that Todd knows what he's doing, and I think that he will never let Candy down, because I think he knows how much she's invested in him, both emotionally and financially.
Yeah, totally. Well, what did you think of the taglines that came out? So, I mean, obviously Atlanta has a bit of a history of, like, launching their taglines about half the way through the season. But I guess it made sense not to have the traditional opening for this episode, given that it took the political route. But what did you think of the taglines? We have five ladies. I personally, like, wasn't really jumping out of my chair for any of them. I don't know. What did you think?
Well, I think at this stage, we've been watching these women for a very long time, and I think it's going to take a lot to get us excited about taglines. I feel like there's not much that they can do. I will say that I think that Cynthia's one missed the mark just a little bit through the alliteration, through, like, she tries to say head over hill, like, for Mike Hill, but it does sound like head over heel. And I think she missed a real opportunity to use Chill, C Hill, which is Cynthia's new name, Chill, in the tagline. That's my only thing. But I'm really excited to meet Drew Sidora, who is the new fifth housewife, who we didn't meet at all during this episode, but we are going to meet next week. We learned that Cynthia is the connection bringing her in. She's lived in Chicago, but they met in LA, and now she's moving to Atlanta. I really don't know much about her, and I've purposely not done any digging on her, because I want a surprise. I want to, the same way I didn't know anything about Wendy, I just want to meet a housewife. I say meet in quotation marks, but I want to meet this new housewife and just, like, try to have no biases from the beginning.
No, I think you're right by saying meet. I mean, my mom, she watched Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and then she would, like, talk to me about it, and she would talk to me like they were her friends. She would be like, she'd be like, Adrian is getting divorced. Can you believe it? I'd be like, and, like, Lisa and Adrian not talking again. And I'm like, okay, mom, they're not your friends. But, like, that, they sometimes it feels that way, right?
It does feel like that. Look, they feel like aunts. They feel like funny aunties. And that's what I want. So when I meet Auntie Drew, I don't want to know about her beforehand. I want her to be the seventh aunt, cousin auntie that I didn't know I had on my mother's side. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, we'll get to meet her next week, and I'm sure we'll have more opinions to share. I think
very exciting.
Let's take another break, because speaking on a podcast is hard work, and we'll come back.
Yeah, we'll come back and we'll talk about Salt Lake City.
We're back. Salt Lake City. Let's do this.
I know. What an episode.
I mean, how far into this season are we? Do we know how many episodes there are in total?
Well, this is only episode 5. We can possibly suspect that there might be less episodes if it was filmed during COVID. Like, I don't really know. But it definitely feels like we are on episode 16 or, like, episode 10. Like, we are almost halfway through a whole season. There's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, so we start this episode where we left off, which is at the Met Gala luncheon.
The Met Gala luncheon.
And So Meredith has just accepted an apology, which I don't really know if there was an apology in there from Jen, but that's happened. And then Mary is still waiting for hers. And Jen sort of says, I'm just the girl that says what everyone else is thinking. And that's when Mary's like, actually, maybe we don't all think the same way as you do.
Yep.
Which I thought was like completely valid. I totally agree with that. Like, not everyone is going to have these crazy opinions like Jen. But that definitely just like kicks it off, right? Between the two of them.
Oh, 100%.
And there's a few things that trigger Jen. One is Mary's eye movements.
Yeah, she's like, but you keep, don't open your eyes at me that way. It was like, Jen was like fishing. She's like clutching at straws at this point.
And I will say that I don't remember which blog I saw this on, which Instagram account, but Ramona's model walked so that Mary Cosby could run.
Oh yeah, the eye movements. For 100%. The eyes.
Wow. And then so they kick off about that. And I just think it's really great that there's also a lot of consideration for Volta and Arturo.
Volta. I read a tweet from Jen Shah's account, because I don't think she sends her own tweets, but this tweet just sort of said that Volta is, he has PTSD now. The way that staff was just watching this fight take place and just like nodding his head, like those dolls that like the dogs that are in your car, like his head was like about to like bounce off his neck.
Well, he has put on a beautiful lunch, a Met Gala worthy lunch at a very exclusive European restaurant in Salt Lake City. And
yeah, I don't know how exclusive it is, because when Jen said, I know Walter too, I died.
I think we all know. No, we have to. His name is Volta.
It's Volta. Okay. It's Volta. When Jen said, I know Volta and Arturo too, I was like, snap.
But, this is the problem with Jen, though. Like, it just spirals out of control very, very quickly. And the thing that I was, like, completely thrown by was then when Jen is clearly, like, what are we, like, is she the bone collector? Is she just really messy? All of the above. But she then brings up the fact that Mary refuses to go into 7-Elevens if there's other black people there.
Yeah.
And the conversation goes from, like, I don't know, whatever petty bullshit they had, to this, like, conversation about race, which I honestly, like, oh wait, I don't know. Like, Mary, I don't think, is avoiding 7-Elevens because of
her. I think Jen is, and we have said this from the beginning, and I think the wider community is kind of in agreement. And the community, I mean, like, weirdos like us who obsess over the housewives. I think there is a consensus that, like, Jen is kind of doing too much. She is bringing things, she's determined to have a feud with Mary. I think that goes without saying. Like, she's determined this is going to be her storyline for the season. And I think she's playing the game of housewives as opposed to, like, trying to be more authentic. And I think Mary is an easy target. Mary is an interesting target. And I think what's happening is that Mary is not biting back in the way that Jen thought she would. I think she thought that Mary would just cop it. But instead, what we're seeing is Mary standing up for herself. And what's happening is the other housewives are also not buying Jen's behavior. And if anything, they're becoming more empathetic to Mary.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's definitely not great to see the two, like, women of color on this show, like, turn against each other.
Yep,
like,
I agree.
Anyone should have stood in solidarity. It should have been those two. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's like completely like one-sided though, because then like Mary does call Jen a ghetto hoodlum, which, you know, I think is like problematic on its own. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's a lot. And Jen has just, I don't know. I don't think she's going to end the season well. I think the reunion, she's going to have a lot to answer for.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so for me, like, some highlights were Mary just basically saying, just get out of here, Jen. Like, saying, bye, Jen. I mean, that's definitely the new goodbye, Kyle. Just bye, Jen. But I do think that Mary, it's such a weird thing because the fights, like, I don't think Jen needed to take the fight there. And I agree with you. I don't think Jen needed to bring up all this back stuff because I think Jen saw that she was having a bit of a losing battle. And she brought up all this stuff that really had nothing to do with the situation at hand. And I think like, yeah, we do have to address the fact that Mary said, you know, said things like that Jen was being ghetto and that Jen was acting like a hoodlum. But I think, like, we also need to address, like, where that's coming from. I think it goes, and like, let's sort of touch on this thing about race. And you did mention, like, you said something really good, which is that, you know, we should not be seeing the two women of color on this show being the ones that go at it. And there's a confessional with Jen, where Jen sort of says, you know, when I first met Mary, I was so excited because she was another minority like me living in Salt Lake City. Like, they are few and far between. And she had all these expectations of how they would be. And that is something that, as a Black person that lives in a, like, predominantly white community, that's, like, something that I've experienced as well, where you meet another person of color in a place where it's just the two of you. And you do kind of put these expectations on each other that, I'm just going to say, are not fair. Being a minority is not monolithic. You know, everybody is really, really different. And I don't think, and I think Jen has potentially made some assumptions about the way Mary is. And I think, you know, for Mary, where she comes from, because they're not the same minority, like, we need to really discuss that. They're not the same. I think, you know, Mary has also had to be a Black woman growing up her whole life in Salt Lake City. That means, like, she's probably had to code switch a lot, which is, you know, not acting in the way that your culture or your race is perceived to act. And she holds herself up to this very different standard. She is the first lady of a church. So for her, she doesn't want to be seen screaming. She doesn't want to be seen yelling at another woman of color across the room. For her, maybe that is culturally hoodlum behavior or ghetto behavior. And that's where she's coming from. We don't know what Mary's whole life was like, but we do know that it's very complicated. It's very weird. There's probably some trauma there. She did marry her step-grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, throughout the episode, there's, and I mean, I know we're talking about Portia in depth before, and we know that I don't really like Lisa Barlow, and I think she's super vapid, but she showed us so much depth in this episode when I think she was really able to come to Mary's side and kind of try to diffuse the situation in a really weird way. And in her confessional, when she says, you know, Jen said that she's saying what we're all thinking, and I think what Mary thinks we're all thinking is that she's just somebody who fucked her grandfather. And, you know, Lisa Barlow says, but that's not even what we're thinking. Like, we're not always thinking about that. And then we see, you know, when Mary and Heather go out for dinner, Mary just break into tears. And she basically says, you know, I don't want people to think I'm just this person who fucked her grandfather. Plus, we're not even blood related. It was a lot.
A lot. I think there's two other notes that I want to make about the luncheon. One being that not only does Mary come for Jen, which, like, good on her, but, like, she also comes for Heather and calls her, like, two-faced and a hypocrite. Which was like, where is that coming from? Like, oh my God.
Well, doesn't Heather call Mary the hypocrite? And Mary's like, I'm not a hypocrite.
No, she says it seems hypocritical.
Oh, that's right. It seems hypocritical. You're absolutely right.
She's not calling her a hypocrite. She just says the behavior seems hypocritical.
Yeah, because she's not really listening to Jen. They're just basically not listening to each other.
And that was the point of the headphones, the Louis Vuitton headphones, which after Jen leaves, because she's done, Mary's like, can someone pass me the headphones? Because
that was iconic.
They were expensive. Like,
that was iconic. Enough. That, what do you think moment?
Mary, What do you think Mary did with them, though? Do you think she like returned them? Do you think she like regifted? What happened to those like Louis Vuitton
I
headphones?
think she regifted them. But I also just, the way she wrapped up that scene, just being like, can you give me those Louis Vuitton headphones back? I was like, this is why Mary Cosby is the icon that she is and the time person of the year that she is, Patrizio.
Time has really gone above and beyond this year. Like four awards, honestly.
I want to say that I loved, like, you spoke earlier about like Meredith accepting Jen's apology, but that scene where Meredith is at home and she's talking to Brooks, the unofficial housewife, her son, and he asks her how the night went. She's like, it was volatile, you know. Jen, you know, kind of apologized. And he's like, well, did she apologize or did she not apologize? Because how does somebody kind of apologize? I just want to talk about the way Brooks is wearing those glasses. He just looked like old Mother Hubbard. He looked like a golden girl, the way he had those glasses on his face and the way he looked down his nose. I loved it.
I don't know if you saw this, but after yesterday's episode, Meredith was on Watch What Happens Live, and one of the questions she's asked is, did Brooks take the semester off college specifically to film the show? And she denied it. She said that it was because every one of her children takes the second semester of their junior year off college to focus on like an internship or another thing. And that his launch of his like fashion label or whatever he's been working on happens to land in the same time period where they're in Salt Lake City, it's filming, and also he's taken like the semester off college.
Oh, the
So.
perfect storm.
Well, I mean, I just thought it was funny that it seemed to be the perfect storm, but I think he's there for like other reasons.
And so he should be. And I think it's like, why not? He's giving us something different. He's good for the show so far. I think he just the way he kind of challenges Meredith to kind of really like just even in that scene, the way he basically just like called out Jen's behavior, like he was like, it's not an apology. Sorry.
Well, while we're on the topic of Meredith, obviously, like we get to see a little bit more into her relationship this episode. She picks up her husband from the airport, which I thought she was driving, but then I think they have a driver because.
Were they in the second row? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I think it was like a bigger car than I thought. Because then when he was like, I'm just going to get in the back, I was like, that'd be weird. But I guess it's because, like, yeah, it's a big car. And they have the fight over their corporate headquarters.
Oh yes, my
Yeah,
corporate
people fall for
headquarters. My corporate headquarters is here. When she said that, I died.
it. I don't know. What's the go here? Like, where does this go next? I mean, at the like, we watched that happen in the middle of the episode, I guess, and then by the end of the episode. They have basically agreed not to see each other. Is that what happened? I don't even remember.
Yeah, I was really sad. I mean, there's so one thing, one note that I took was that I thought their bedroom that they were in was a hotel until the dog came in.
That's what I thought too. I thought they were at a hotel.
Because it just did not feel very homely. But which shows like they've really just moved into that house and probably just moved into that house for the show. But I don't know, it was really sad. And what it really made me think about was the pressure that we put on people to live by social norms. I think that they need to redefine what marriage means for them, and that they're putting a lot of pressure on themselves by saying that their marriage means that they both have to live in the same place at the same time. I think that's what they would want. I think like Seth wants her with him all the time. But it seems to me that they're both still so in love with each other. And that the only reason that they're saying that they're separated, because they've admitted that they're not dating other people, but they're saying that the only reason that they're saying that they're separated is just because they are spending that time apart working. But it seems to me like they can afford to travel. They're not always working. They can afford to still see each other. They are at different points in their life where they should also be trying to have other interests because their kids are grown. I think, yeah, I would just say that I think they need to redefine what marriage looks like for them and stop trying to have it be so traditional. Too much pressure.
Well, I was going to say, I guess maybe living in Salt Lake City, like there's a pressure to have like the perfect marriage, and but then they don't even live in Salt Lake City. Like they're not even from there.
Yeah. Who cares? So... And to be honest, they've signed up to do this show. They've already essentially been like, fuck the norms of what the pressure is. Like we're doing this show. But yeah, I just think that they're just putting way too much pressure on themselves to try and have this marriage from when they started. They're not the same people now they were 25 years ago. And I don't think that like living their life the way that they're living it is them throwing away all of those years. Like you love each other. That's the foundation of it. You respect each other. You support each other. Like that's what it should just be about. Wow. Sorry about that little sermon on what marriage should be.
I'm just going to change directions. What do you think of her confessional look where she's wearing that blue outfit with like the dead straight,
the hair, that hair doesn't look real. That hair looks like a wig and it looks like a bad wig.
Yeah, I don't know. She has some like strong fashion choices.
Speaking of other confessional looks, I'm not digging any of Whitney's confessional looks except for her first one. The red outfit with the hair up and that like old Hollywood glamour look, they age her. She's only meant to be 30. She looks not good. She looks not good.
Yeah, actually, I saw this morning on one of the, I'm the worst. I don't remember where I see anything, but it was on one of the Instagrams and it was comparing Jenny McCarthy's looks with Whitney's. And like, they've literally done the same looks.
They
kind of look very similar as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're cookie cutter blondes, right?
Yeah, so I wonder if, like, Whitney's taking some inspiration from Jenny McCarthy.
Well, the question that I had, and I wrote this in my notes, is do we think that Whitney's dad is doing her hair?
No.
You'll seem very sure of that.
No, definitely. Well, I mean, except for maybe that, did you see her look on Watch What Happens Live?
No, I haven't.
It was like a NeNe Leakes, like, Bob wig situation. Oh,
interesting. Yeah, we definitely think that Whitney loves to play with the hair. So I think like there's definitely some wigs going on. I think all the women on Salt Lake are wearing wigs, to be honest with you, except for Lisa Barlow. Oh, and Heather. Yeah. Heather just has really great normal hair. Can we talk about Whitney and her story, like her arc in this episode from the jiu-jitsu with her brother, who, can I just say, I was so glad they said it was her brother, because I don't know about you, but did you feel a bit of the sexual tension when they first met each other?
But they, are they brother and sister? Because like this, I got confused.
Oh, they're stepbrother and stepsister. Yep, definitely.
Right? So maybe there is some sexual tension, but like... I got very confused because she explained like all of the relationships.
Yeah.
And then was like, and then this guy is this, and I was like,
But then she said that he wasn't his dad, and that's when I was like, okay, so this is her stepbrother. Okay, I get it. But but Patrizio, they like really wanted to bang. Like, I'm not even joking. And then when we watched her, like, she did like almost Adrian Malouf style, like pushing him down and like showing us the strength. Like, I don't want to fuck with Whitney. Like, she will kill me. But there is something, her brother has a crush on her. It was a lot.
Well, you do know she is a swinger.
She said she's not, but we also do know that it's Salt Lake City. It's Utah, so anything is possible. But yeah, I don't know. I just felt a lot of sexual tension and I felt a weight lifted off my shoulder because I thought we were about to witness her having an affair. And then I felt a weight lift off my shoulder when they said that it was her brother. I mean, it wasn't a huge weight lifted off my shoulder, but it was like some sort of weight.
Just like going back a topic, who do you think has the more iconic hair, Whitney or her father?
Oh, her dad. Her dad's hair lives rent-free in my mind.
And do you think her dad does his own hair?
I think it's a wig.
Do you think he gets his wig from the same place Whitney does?
Potentially. I wouldn't be surprised.
So many questions I have. But glad to see that he is, like, proactively seeking help in this episode.
Yes, but sober living. We love it.
I think that Whitney possibly is a real standout. Like, Mary, obviously, iconic. I think she is definitely going to go down in Housewives history. But, like, there's something about Whitney that she's just very authentic.
Yep.
She is giving us these, like, great insights into her life. And it's definitely, like, she's willing to share. Like, yes. There's no hiding the truth.
She's like Ashley.
Totally. And I think underrated. I don't know. I don't think she's getting enough screen time.
I agree with you. I don't think we're getting enough of her, but I think what we are getting is really, really good and really, really important. I love it.
Yeah, I love Whitney. I think she's a great addition to the cast.
Can I just say one thing that gave me anxiety when they were driving to the sober living facility is that they weren't wearing seatbelts and that her dad sits so far back from the steering wheel. Like, I just want to say that that was giving me anxiety.
I didn't even notice.
These are the things that I pick up on because it really freaks me out.
Oh my God. Yeah, that would give me a lot of anxiety, to be honest.
I know I said earlier on in the episode that we saw a bit of depth from Lisa Barlow. I just think at the luncheon and her confessionals, what she gave us was really, really good. But then we also see, like, her bit this episode was, like, they take us to her son Henry's birthday party where she is so fucking extra that she actually reminded me of, like, an SNL character. Like, she reminded me of a cliche of a rich soccer mom. Do you know what I mean? Like, she didn't seem real. It was insane.
Well, I mean, she is clearly just buying her children's affection and love because she's about to be, like, completely absent for the next, like, couple of weeks with, like, Sundance Festival. Those kids are going to need a lot of therapy, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But how interesting was it where she just sort of says, like, I need to give my kids all of this attention because in a couple of weeks when Sundance happens, I'm basically just going to ignore them. Like, that's literally what she says. Like, I'm going to ignore them because I'm doing Sundance. What is she doing that she can't give her kids even 5 minutes? Like, what do we think that's really about?
I mean, I think I'm glad that she is aware enough that she's doing it.
Yeah.
But also, like, this is just her personality. It's, like, no different from her at the luncheon being, like, I just set really high goals for myself.
Yeah. And
it's hard being me. Like, this is no different. It's just she's, like, I don't know, a bit narcissistic, I guess.
I think she is. Her. I think she's very narcissistic and she gets it, but she makes no excuses of it. I also thought it was really interesting when she was talking about marriage and talking about, like, Meredith and Seth's separation and talking about her marriage with her husband. And she was really basically attributing the fact that she has, like, a quote-unquote successful marriage down to the fact that of the church. You know, the church teaches eternal marriage is one of the things that she said, an eternal family. And so for her, like, divorce is never going to be an option. She's very honest. Like, you just, you know, there are things that you're just never going to agree about, but the way the church is, and I think Heather's touched on this before, is that you're just meant to, like, push through and work through it. And then when she talked about the time that she threw her husband's Rolex out the window, I was like, iconic. But yeah, I think it was another layer that we're seeing, I think, which to me, like, when she said that, it made me actually understand a little bit more about where Heather is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And just hearing that, it's a bit scary, to be honest with you, but yeah, it's interesting to learn about this side of people.
And I'm glad they found the Rolex.
Yeah, I'm glad they found the Rolex too. But honestly, how good would it have been if you were just walking down the street and you found a Rolex?
Oh my God. I mean, I would never throw a Rolex out of my window to begin with.
True. I just want to say, like, also speaking of marriages, Jen and Coach Shah, that he lives in the phone, to quote to quote Karen Huger talking about Jamal. I think Coach Shah definitely lives in the phone.
Yes. Well, he's a busy man.
He is. Did you like that editing? The way they did the side by side of Jen Shah talking to Coach Shah via the phone about what had happened at the luncheon, and then Mary talking to her grandfather husband side by side while she was wearing that amazing silver tracksuit and the hat. And I realized why I love Mary's fashions actually in that moment. She reminds me a lot of the character Idina Monsoon from Absolutely Fabulous, who is one of my life icons. And so I was like, Mary Cosby is the embodiment of Idina Monsoon in real life. Amazing.
I actually can't believe I'm going to be trying to find a silver.
We're getting matching silver tracksuits.
Tracksuit sets.
We're getting it. We are totally getting it. I want us to both wear those. But what did you think about that editing, that side by side? I thought it was really interesting. They're both having these conversations with their husbands, and the way, like, the continuity was brilliant. Like, this is that Emmy award winning shit we talk about.
Oh, totally. Like, I think, yeah, great editing, great production. I mean, but like, I think it's just like indicative of life as well. Like, they were both just like, you know, rehashing the events from last night with their like partners. And yeah, I guess Jen's husband always in that phone.
In the phone, but giving her the pep talk that she needs, I guess.
Yeah, well, he's the coach.
He is the coach, Shah. And I think finally we have to talk about Heather. And I will say that we're learning a lot more about what her marriage was like and what it's like for her now being separated. I do love that she talks about like how her daughter has a boyfriend and how she wants her daughter to be all about like free love and like choosing love over faith and, you know, just talking about like perhaps not going to the church. But the scene that like made me giggle so much, this is this thing about like Heather trying to be down, like she's so cool, when you can hear her daughter's boyfriend's car revving up the road and she's like, I got mad respect. Got mad respect for him and his car. I was like, oh my God, Heather, stop.
I'm surprised we're even talking about Heather. I felt like that whole scene was a bit of a throwaway. I don't know. Like, it's interesting. I think maybe, is it building towards something? Because now her kids sort of seem to be, like, tapping out of, like, Mormonism.
Yeah, but I think that's what it's trying to show us. It's trying to show. But the other thing that I will say that I love is that she owned the fact that her lifestyle is still being paid for by her husband. You know, a lot of these women on these shows whose lifestyles are being paid for by a benefactor, a husband, and I mean, rightfully so, that's her spousal support that she is eligible for. Like, she deserves it. She's raising these girls. But people are very hesitant to talk about it. They never want people to really know. And I thought it was really good that she let us know, because I was thinking, like, surely her skin boutique, yes, I'm sure they make a lot of money, but I don't think it's enough to continuously buy her all these bags and all these clothes and when she's got three daughters. And so I think it was really good to learn that although they're divorced, he's doing the right thing. He's, you know, supporting the family. He, to the lifestyle that they were already accustomed to, which is really important. And I thought it was really great to see her interacting with her daughters and talking about whether or not they're going to go to church and how she feels about it. But in terms of what it's building up to, I think it's building up to her leaving the party next week with that man.
You think?
Yes, because she says, I'm going to be late tonight. And then by the time the episode ends and they give us the preview of next week, there's that scene where, is it Whitney talking to Jen or something, she left with a man, and not just any man, a big black man. That's who she leaves with.
Okay, so I missed that little bit there. I thought it was Meredith Reed leaving with someone.
No. Oh, is it Meredith? I was under the impression it was Heather.
I thought it was Meredith because she's separated and, like, her husband was like, I'm out. So I thought Meredith was leaving with someone, but now that you said a black man, I'm like, okay, that's totally Heather.
It's totally Heather because she has been
unapologetic about how much she loves black men.
Totally unapologetic about it, but also she's got mad respect. She's down. So, you know, I'm really excited. You know what? I love this for her.
Like, imagine leaving the Mormon church and then having a hookup with a black man. Like, I'm here sure, for it.
I'm sure there are interracial relationships in there. I think what makes this so, this is more interesting because she's brought it up before and, you know, she's a mother with these gorgeous three little blonde daughters. There's all this stuff. Like, just the optics of it is quite interesting and fascinating. But we also know that she's about to have her second life. She also can't be that old because, and I don't think that there's anything as being that old, but I think that she's still very young because they do start these families very young. So I think that she's very much in, like, I think this is very natural for her to be having another life again at this point in her life.
Well, you know what, Moshi? Like, I didn't realize what was happening in that, like, final scene where they were, like, previewing next week. You have now left me on the edge of my chair. I can't believe we have already reached the end of another episode.
Yes, and I hope our intention is to leave our listeners on the end of their chairs. But, I mean, I really hope they've enjoyed this little discussion. That's what it is.
I mean, I have. Even I can't wait till the next episode.
I can't wait either. I'm like, yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat because I not only can I not wait to watch it, but then I can't wait to download and discuss it with you.
Oh, I just can't wait to see whether we will actually manage to sync the from the lower level at the beginning.
That's never going to happen. At this point, I've just given up. Like, it is what it is.
That's cool. Okay, well, let's leave it there for this week. Moshi, as always, it's been a pleasure.
I love you, Patrizia. I can't wait to talk to you about episodes next week. Bye.